Listening to Upfront, I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. One of the more striking charges in the grand jury indictments released by the Mueller investigation last week, that one of the named Russian military officers allegedly hacked a state board of elections database and lifted out records on some 500,000 voters. Also that the same person allegedly hacked a vendor that supplies software used to verify voter registrations. Now, the indictment was silent on the much more widespread hacking reported in a Bloomberg investigation in 2017. That report said there were breaches in 39 states, that data lifted from one server in Illinois included records on some 15 million people. But this all gets at a much more fundamental question. Our system for holding elections is a patchwork of state agencies, local agencies, and private vendors, all with highly varying degrees of security measures and highly varying degrees of accountability for how their equipment works, running an increasingly computerized process for determining the will of the public. Thought this would be a good time to dive into where the vulnerabilities are headed into the 2018 midterms and what might be done about them before then. We're joined in studio by Jonathan Simon. He's executive director of the Election Defense Alliance, author of Code Red, Computerized Elections and the War on American Democracy. Thank you for coming in.
Okay, thanks, Brian, for having me.
Let's start with your origin story. When did you start paying attention to voting systems?
Well, my background is in polling way back, as early as the Carter administration. And so I knew a lot about how polling works. I knew a lot about how exit polling works, and I had some contacts in the exit polling field. So when the elections began to be computerized, and some computerization really goes back to the 60s, but with the Help America Vote Act in 2002, computers basically took over pretty much every aspect from the voting process itself to the vote counting to the central tabulators and the whole pipeline. And that was something that struck me 16 years ago as being a danger. And so I started looking at election returns from a forensics standpoint and was prepared to look at the 2002 returns in comparison, for instance, with the exit polls as a baseline. And of course, the exit polls were scrubbed. They were canceled that year. They were conducted, but they were never made public. And that was because they were so far off from the actual vote counts, or what were purported to be the actual vote counts, that there was an acute embarrassment, and they just pulled the exit polls. The overriding assumption, as a matter of fact, unquestionable assumption, has been during this entire computerized voting and vote counting era, is that the vote counts are gospel. They're correct. Anything that disagrees with them, whether it's pre-election polls, exit polls, hand counts, comparing competitive versus non-competitive elections, anything that suggests that the vote counts have in one way or another been inaccurate, they've been manipulated, or there's error, has basically been dismissed. It's been dismissed with either a shrug or a sneer or a scoff of some sort. And the overriding reason behind that seems to have been that we can't undermine voter confidence in the electoral process. So we're going to preserve voter confidence in the electoral process by refusing to examine or investigate any evidence that that process has been corrupted.
Right. So, I mean, there are polls that are conducted with flaws in their model of who likely voters are. There are exit polls that are not rigorous enough. Polls screw up all the time. What is the evidence for vulnerabilities in the actual voting systems rather than the polls when there's a disparity?
Well, the evidence for the vulnerability in the systems, and that is, there's the conspiracy theory part of this that says elections have been corrupted, and then there's the non-conspiracy theory part that the system is vulnerable. I think there's virtually universal agreement among experts that the system is vulnerable. And this goes to Johns Hopkins, Caltech, the Brennan Center, the states of Ohio and California, the GAO, have really basically come out and said that a single person can alter the results of basically hundreds of elections. And that if you had a small crew, you could basically, perpetrate a rolling coup by changing key electoral results.
Walk me through what that would look like.
Well, one of the techniques for doing something like that would be to just taint memory cards that are used to count the votes, that are used to tabulate the votes in these machines.
These are the machines that are at the polling place that many, like the touchscreen machines that many of us cast our votes on.
Touchscreen machines and optical scanners, which is, you know, between the two of them, I mean, we're looking at basically 98% of the votes in this country are counted in one or the other way. They are both computers. They both have a lot of programming. A memory card, typical memory card, and an optical scanner has between 500 and 700,000 lines of code on it. It's a lot of code. Three lines of code will offset the zero counters on that memory card. So, for instance, if you want, oh, I don't know, Bush to win and Kerry to lose, we'll just take it out of the current context a little bit, and you have access to those memory cards, which would
meaning be physical access.
Physical access, or in some cases, basically what amounts to Wi-Fi access. The central computers that are used to program these cards are almost always connected to the internet. So you don't necessarily have to be holding the card in your hand. You might have a password or something along those lines. And what you would do is you could set Bush's zero counter to, let's say, plus 100. You'd set Kerry's zero counter to minus 100. You know, there is no zero in a computer. If you're counting ballots by hand or manually in public, the table would be zero and the first ballot on it would be one. In a computer, the zero has to be defined. So basically, Bush's zero would be plus 100, Kerry's zero would be minus 100. At the end of the day, if you have 500 people come in and vote for Bush and 500 people come in and vote for Kerry, the machine will spit out that 600 voted for Bush and 400 voted for Kerry. Now, the election administrator in charge of that precinct or in charge of that county or in charge of that state is going to look at that and say, well, 1,000 people voted. Let's look at the poll tapes. Yep, 1,000 people came in and signed the poll tapes. Clean election, certified, all good. And you just shifted 200, a net of 200 votes. It's basically undetectable. It would be very difficult to detect even if investigators were given access to that memory card. It would take, you know, according to the computer experts that I've consulted, weeks to pour through that memory card and find where that code had been inserted and how it had affected that count.
That's the code, but you can't check results. In the case of an optical scan machine, you have an auditable paper trail. You have the ballots that voters bubbled in. You check that against the tabulation. You know whether or not the machine's performing according to spec. Or you could do a test run on a machine before election day.
Okay, test run is useless because the code can be set in such a way that it passes the test. I mean, think of Volkswagen.
Sure, date specific.
It can be date specific and time specific. So that's not going to work. Pre-test, post-test don't work. As far as the ballots, yes, absolutely. Paper ballots would be a good thing. We're you know, getting there very slowly. However, I would ask back to you, how many times has that actually been done? Mm-hmm. With all the elections that have thrown up all sorts of red flags in terms of disparities from baselines, and that's something we have to discuss, because it's not just, okay, the exit poll says one thing and the you know, the vote count says something else. It's a question of validating those baselines using. So when you have validated baselines and you have disparities and they're all pointing in one direction, you would say very logically, well, let's go to the tape. Let's check those ballots. You cannot get those ballots out of the ballot box. There is exactly one county out of 3,144 counties in this country that removes those ballots from the ballot box and actually looks at them, counts them, in the aftermath of an election, and that's Columbia County in New York. None of the other counties do, and as a matter of fact, when attempts have been made to access those ballots, absolutely off limits. According to the courts, it's proprietary, the memory cards are proprietary, the ballots themselves are not able to be examined. And we, you know, there are cases where we've gotten close and evidence has been destroyed. I mean, the most recent is the Georgia 6th House election in 2017, the Ossoff Handel race, the most expensive invested in House election in U.S. history. the red flags were vermilion. There was no exit polls there. But if you looked at the ballots that were verifiable, that were cast on paper, and then you looked at the ballots that were non-verifiable cast on DRE, because the disparity was absolutely enormous. I mean, the Democrat, John Ossoff, won where the ballots were verifiable by 28%. Where they were not verifiable on Election Day, the DRE counts, his opponent, the Republican Karen Handel, won by 16%. So, you know,
it's certainly plausible that there's some selection bias as to who votes on paper ballots,
yes,
right? Yes,
exactly.
That could show nothing more than the fact that Democrats vote on paper.
Yes, exactly. However, that's not the case. We looked at the past three elections in that very district. It turns out the Republicans are more likely to vote on paper by a wide margin in that district. So that was one benign explanation. Part of what contributes to my frustration and some of my colleagues' frustration is that we tend to be about six steps ahead of the tax collector on this. I mean, we're no idiots. And we look at these things very carefully. You know, some don't. There are some that just come out screaming fraud from the rooftops because some exit poll and, you know, some vote count disagrees. I'm not one of them. I mean, we're a lot more careful than that, and in part because we want to get to the truth, and in part because we get our ears pinned back if we make, you know, such a fundamental error. So we looked at that, and yes, Republicans were more apt to vote on paper. That explanation went down the tubes. But where I'm going with this was that there was a lawsuit filed in the aftermath of that election, and the suit was not to contest the election because that deadline had passed. It was to tried to decertify these paperless DREs that were used in the state of Georgia and that were used in that election. And as part of that suit, there was a request to examine the server that was used to program that election. 4 days after the filing of the suit, the Kennesaw State Election Center that was in charge of that election destroyed that server, degaussed it, wiped it clean, gone. 4 days after the filing of the suit was then about a month later removed to federal court, where it was discovered that there were two backup copies of that server. The day after the removal to federal court, oops, gone, degaussed, both backup copies. So, you know, the oops defense might work once, it doesn't work twice, it doesn't work three times. And I could go on about this. There's another case in Florida, there was a case in Massachusetts. So, you know, that sort of leads to this, the sense that, okay, we have access to indirect evidence. We have access to pattern evidence, exit polls, pre-election polls comparing competitive versus non-competitive races, hand counts versus machine counts. This is not the best evidence. We're perfectly aware of that. Have we proven that there's election theft rampant in this country? It depends on your definition of proof, but I'd have to say no. But what we have demonstrated is that there's been a consistent, one-way, unilateral pattern of red flags, of things that should make us worried. And going forward, to appropriate $380 million and say, yeah, put in a few patches on your machines, whether it's the Russians that are at the gates or domestic operatives, people that have access to the programming process, that's a ridiculous response in defense of our democracy.
I want to get into solutions in a minute. First, I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking to Jonathan Simon. He's executive director of the Election Defense Alliance and author of Code Red, Computerized Elections and the War on American Democracy, which is just out in a new edition. I want to flip to the other side of the voting systems ledger for a second. And this is where some investigators like Greg Palast have directed a lot of their fire. It's at how the lists of eligible voters are kept, what the rules are for registration, what the rules are for purging those lists, and what the software is that's used for purging those lists. So far, in terms of what's made its way into indictments stemming from the 2016 election, this appears to be where the hacking fire, at least the indictable hacking fire, has been directed. How big a source of concern is that side of the equation?
That is a very big source of concern. I mean, Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman are two of my colleagues working out of Ohio and California, respectively, coined the term strip and flip. You know, if you're a minority and you're going to hold power, you got to put a lot of thumbs on the scale, especially if you govern badly. You know, if you have a low approval rating, if you're antagonizing vast, sections of the public, one of the first things you have to make sure is that those antagonized people don't vote. And then, of course, if they do vote, that their votes are not accurately counted. Obviously, one way of doing that is putting up barriers to voting, which can be, restrictive voter ID laws, et cetera, et cetera.
Fewer polling places in poor and minority neighborhoods, longer lines, shoddier equipment that's more broken down.
All of the above.
Right.
Denial of service attacks, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we saw in the movie Stealing America.
Which seems like a pretty easy conspiracy that is legal and can be done in plain sight.
Yeah. I have no argument with you there. Those are the overt tactics. I mean, you can throw in gerrymandering, you can throw in dark money. There's all sorts of thumbs on the scale. And so there is a great reason to be concerned about what somebody like, Kris Kobach is doing, this Kansas Secretary of State and the
erstwhile chair of the no longer extant Election Integrity Commission.
Exactly,
for the Trump administration.
Of the disbanded commission that tried to get its hands on all this voter data, on its way out the door, but really had no purpose other than to try to get its hands on that data for whatever purpose it might be used, and to create some justification for passing even more restrictive voter laws. There are crucial states throughout the country. I mean, from Arizona to Wisconsin to, North Carolina, Florida, Texas, where as soon as the Voting Rights Act was gutted by a 5-4 Supreme Court decision, they lost no time in jumping in and changing the administrative processes and the regulations around voting to make it more difficult for people of color to vote, the aged to vote, the young, college students, transients, renters, you name it, by a whole variety of techniques. Then you have the voting lists, which, again, have become computerized, just like the vote counting process, which leaves them very vulnerable to interference of various sorts. And you can create a fair amount of havoc by, let's say, purging 160,000 voters, because those voters then come to the polls. They are not aware of what's happened or why it's happened. They're individually just sort of at the polls going, wait a minute, what's going on here? They're handed a provisional ballot, which in many cases is not counted. Provisional ballots are a pretty deep, dark secret.
The poll worker doesn't know to hand them a provisional ballot.
Or the education,
the instructions. I don't have time for this. There's 10 minutes left on my lunch break.
That's right. I mean, and again, it impacts the Democratic constituency, let's be real. If we are to fix our system, we have to button it up against hackers coming from the outside, but we also have to button it up against programmers and people with access to the programming process. I mean, without hauling in anybody into court, we're talking about prospectively and prophylactically to say, we have to have a system that is not vulnerable to either the Russians or to Karl Rove or Roger Stone. And that means a system where the votes are counted in public and observably, and or audited in public and observably on paper. The reforms that are taking place now, I mean, we're seeing DREs being replaced by ballot marking devices.
DREs, we should translate that, because you've dropped it a couple of times.
Direct recording electronic machines. So those are touchscreen machines. You touch the little square and it casts your vote.
And your vote is cast in the form of bytes, not in form of a paper ballot.
Right, no paper,
out,
no paper
out from
ballot.
The machine.
Right. So those horrific things, which, were brought in without a lot of thinking about it in, 2002 and the years following, seem to be on their way out. But they're being replaced by ballot marking devices, which are touchscreens that create a paper ballot, which has a barcode on it. And it's the barcode that is then read by the optical scanner. So
you as the voter can't look at it and interpret it and see if it accurately
reflects. Unless you know how to read barcodes,
right,
which, I don't. On the ballot, there may be a, you voted for, I don't know, you voted for Ossoff line, but the barcode is what's read, the printed barcode is what's read by the optical scanner. Now, it's absolutely trivial, child's play, to print "you voted for Ossoff" and have the barcode be a vote for Handel.
But again, with paper, it's auditable. You can go to the record and see if there's a divergence between the barcodes and what's printed on the voter's ballot.
Yes, that's true. And it's a small comfort as long as we don't have a process for getting that paper out. For instance, I mean, look at the 2016 recounts. You know, Jill Stein stepped up. She got a lot of support. I think raised over $6 million in basically a week to pursue those recounts. Because if you remember, I mean, Clinton won the popular vote, fine. And Trump won the three states that put him over the top, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, by a total of 77,000 votes. I mean, it was razor, razor thin. And there were all sorts of reports of malfunctioning voting machines and whatnot. So Jill Stein went in to pursue the recount. Well, in Pennsylvania, he couldn't recount because most of it was on DREs and there was no paper.
Well, the recount meant pressing the same button they'd pressed for the initial count.
Pressing the same
button. I mean, that was the Pennsylvania's argument.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that was basically hopeless. In Wisconsin, where the votes were cast on paper throughout the state, of course, Trump, you know, and his forces got in there counter-suing very, very quickly, and they prevailed in Wisconsin. The Republican judge, it was a judge who was Republican appointed, said, well, you know, counting manually is the gold standard. This is what I recommend. But you know what? I don't have the power to tell the counties how to count. So the counties are on their own. They can all select the way they want to count. So half the ballots in Wisconsin were, quote unquote, air quotes, recounted by doing exactly what you said, shoving them back through the op scans, pushing the same button and saying, hey, we got the same result. That's great.
One of the biggest counterarguments to your kind of global narrative that I've heard come out of election security experts is that our system for administering elections is so fragmented that the fragmentation itself creates a certain type of security because it would be excessively difficult to systematically swing the vote across the nation. In other words, you might penetrate one system, you might penetrate one vendor, you might get into the database at one county board of elections, but
all right,
determining the presidency would be a much more monumental task.
Yeah, that one doesn't even pass my laugh test because basically you have two vendors that supply 80% of the voting equipment. So right there, I mean, you're looking at tremendous centralization. Then you're looking at the fact that, you know, if you're looking at hackers coming from the outside, it may be true that they have to go into a lot of different systems. That said, it certainly looks like, you know, the level of hacker that might have been involved coming out of Russia has that capacity. They're good, just right. Like we're good. They're good. So they could do it. But insiders, obviously, at any one of those, I'll name the names, ES&S or Dominion, have access to 80% of the equipment and the programming. Some of the programming is done by satellite companies, which if you think ES&S and Dominion are kind of opaque and hard to get a handle on, the satellite companies are absolutely, you know, black windows, and you cannot get anything out of them. Kennesaw State was one of them. And, you know, what did they do? They destroyed the servers when they were under, you know, attempted to be part of a lawsuit. But you have, you know, these satellite organizations like LHS Services New England, Triad Services the Midwest, do actually do programming and for usually a suite of states. And absolutely enough states that if you just got into Triad, if you just got into Command Central, if you just got into LHS, you'd have scope enough to, in this particular election, 2016, changed the presidential result. But beyond that, I mean, we think the real damage, the more lasting damage, is done at the down ballot levels.
Jonathan Simons, anybody getting it right in your estimation of the United States running clean elections?
Yeah, Columbia County, New York, is one good example.
What about California's voting systems?
Well, California was getting it righter until they passed, I'm bad with numbers, that basically took 40% of the ballots out of the auditing protocol, which was ostensibly done to make it more convenient for you know, election night work and election administrators, because we have all this early voting and absentee voting and whatnot, it makes it very difficult. California is a tough state, a lot of propositions, a lot to count. So in the process of making it more, you know, facilitate that, the legislature and its infinite wisdom, there's a 1% mandatory audit in California, and they pulled all these other ballots, these early ballots and whatnot,
categorically
out of it. So that was a weakening of what goes on in California. Up to that point, even the 1% audit was doing a pretty good job in California. We have pretty strong evidence that most, if not all, elections in California have been straight up and have been left alone. We're doing a reasonably good job, but there's still vulnerability.
Jonathan Simon, we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Brian. I enjoyed it.
Jonathan Simon is Executive Director of the Election Defense Alliance. He is author of Code Red, Computerized Elections and the War on American Democracy, just out in a new edition.